This is Sports Talk from AM 870 WKAR.
This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
Braverman, welcome back to Sports Talk 870 AM. And it should be an exciting 55 minutes. We'll try to make it that way. My second day on the job. I'm not Earl Robinson, so don't get your hopes up. And if Judd Heathcote hears that, he'll say, oh, yeah, you're just like Earl. You're short and you're slow and blah, blah. But he'll be on in a minute. The old curmudgeon is standing by out in Spokane. Before we talk to the coach, we'll just get you up to speed on tonight. I mean, there's so much hype, and it's been going on for 48 hours. It's about time we took a deep breath, stepped back, because at 7 o'clock tonight, it's going to be absolutely intense, as it was when Michigan came to town. But, you know, Michigan State has had about 8 meetings with teams that were in the top 10 at the Breslin Center. The Spartans have come out on top 6 of those 8 meetings. But this is the first time ever two teams, both ranked in the top 5 in the nation, have met in East Lansing. Indiana, number 1 in all polls, tied with the Spartans for first place in the Big Ten at 11-2. And Michigan State, number 4 in the AP poll, number 5 USA Today coaches poll, but number 3 in the CBS.com poll. It doesn't matter. You can throw them all out the window. This is the top game in the nation. The whole country in college basketball will be focused on East Lansing and Michigan State, Indiana tonight. As someone texted me a little while ago, maybe the last time something this exciting between Michigan State and Indiana was when Magic Johnson was playing, and Indiana and Coach Bobby Knight brought Isaiah Thomas to town. And they were always great rivals, Magic and Isaiah, from college right into the NBA. And tonight, I guess you could say maybe it's Appling Oladipo. It could be Knicks versus Zeller. It could be Christian Watford versus Brandon Dawson. I mean, the matchups are intriguing, exciting. As you should know, if you don't, Indiana beat the Spartans by 5 in Bloomington, 75-70. So this is the rematch, and the home court advantage, oh, huge. And we'll talk with Coach Heathcote about that in a moment. But I think I found out that only twice has Michigan State hosted previously number 1 teams in East Lansing, and they were both from the Big Ten, oddly enough, and I'm sure you're looking at yourself right now saying, who are those teams? Wisconsin was the last team, ranked number 1, and the Spartans defeated them, and then previous to that, Illinois came to town ranked number 1, and they did beat Michigan State. So I guess if you want to look at that one, it's 1-1 versus number 1s. But either way, it should be absolutely intriguing. And the Spartans have a 17-game winning streak on the line at the Breslin Center. Indiana has not defeated Michigan State since 1991, when Bobby Knight was at the helm of the Hoosiers. And a guy named Judd Heathcote was in charge of the Spartan program. Is Judd right there now? Is he on the line? Do I have to push this button, Alex? Okay. Judd, how you doing?
Hey, my slogan is still alive at 85, so I guess that's... You know, I've always said the guys that want to be 86 are the ones that are 85. So
you always said a lot of things, Coach. You all, how are things in Spokane, by the way?
Well, we got a little snow this morning, and we haven't had much snow all of February, so I guess we still have a little winter, but we're looking forward to spring.
I'm going to tell you what, it's cold and breezy here in East Lansing, but it will be, of course, hot in the Breslin Center tonight. Before we talk about the game, I want to go back to December 15th, because the only guy missing from the Michigan State alumni game at Jennison Fieldhouse, where you used to stalk the sidelines, was you. And I know you were having some health issues and you just recovered from surgery. I wish you could have been there. It was fun.
Well, you know, I was really looking forward to that. I looked at the roster and there were 52 names, as you mentioned, and 26 of those played for me. So after 18 years of retirement, it's just amazing that that many players And I'm sure they looked old and played old, but it would have been just great to see them.
Well,
and
yeah.
You know, both Bev and I fell in the ice coming out of church, and I said she had more padding than I, so wasn't hurt, but I kind of bruised my tailbone, and I couldn't walk, so I had to cancel out, and I was really disappointed.
Maybe there's a moral there, Coach. That's what you get for going to church.
Yeah, that,
I won't say that.
I told people.
You know, the final score of that game, and by the way, they played four 15-minute quarters with a 30-second shot clock, so you know you wouldn't have liked it because there wasn't much defense. But it was 125 to 118.
Well, at least it was close.
Well, yeah. It was 2 points at halftime. You know, I could read you the rosters, and it would probably take too long. But of all the guys that suited up, did anybody tell you who was the leading scorer in the game?
Now, I think it was Bray Weathers, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. You're way ahead of me because you had guys that played in the NBA like Steve Smith and Morris Peterson and Kevin Willis,
yeah.
And Stackinga. But yet, here's Ray Weathers, who is in absolutely terrific shape. He really looked like he was in playing condition, had 18 points. Now, let me give you some of the other scorers, and you could probably figure this out. Isaiah Dahlman, one of our younger Spartan graduates, had 11. Daryl Johnson had 11. Now, DJ played for you.
Steve was a great player for us.
Yeah. Steve Smith had 13. That was for the green team. And, by the way, the green team lost to the white team. The white team had Charlie Bell, 13 points. Morris Peterson had 13. David Thomas had 14. Torbert had 8. Adam Wolfe, who didn't play a whole lot, had 11. But Ray Weathers was the absolute MVP of the game. It was fun. The bad thing was they didn't have numbers on their back. They didn't have names.
The old PA announcer
had a hard time figuring out who was who, but you certainly were. Oh, by the way, even the referee, you might remember. He was one of your managers, Lewis Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
Lewis worked the game. He probably is happy you weren't on the sideline because I know you would have ripped him.
Yeah, he probably would have given me a technical. I don't know.
Well, anyway, it was fun. Then Tuskegee came to town the next day, and we did that salute and the remembering of the 50-year game. But you were missed, and you know that. And now I want to ask you the question that comes about tonight. Two guys who you both saw something in way back when, both Tom Izzo and Tom Crean, to be an assistant coach for you. Coach, talk about that. Let's start with Tom Crean a little bit. How did you recruit him to come to East Lansing?
Well, you know, one thing I'm saying about tonight's game is Tom is going to win. So, you know, that's...
Master of the obvious.
That's a known fact. Well, in all honesty, the reason that we hired Tom Crean was because Tom Izzo recommended him and sold me on how hard he worked and the passion of the game that he had and so on. So I think you can give Tom credit for that. And I hired Tom after he came down 3 years to come in and say that he wanted to be part of the program. Finally, when we had an opening, I said, hey, a guy that wants to be part of the program that bad has to have something going for him. So I hired Tom Izzo. So that's kind of the way those two guys got hired.
Do you see them as similar in personalities and characteristics in recruiting, or are there differences that you can see?
Well, I see a lot of differences. Of course, I'm very partial to Tom Izzo. And, you know, I think he still maybe does more teaching than most coaches in all of basketball. But I think Tom Crean does a lot of that, too. And, you know, we always used to say, hey, if you want to work, if you want to be coached, you'll get better in this program. And, you know, Tom and I were together for 12 years, and we believed that. And I think Tom has just carried on that for the 18 years now that he's been the head coach. So I give Tom credit. You know, I look at this year's team, and they ask me, what kind of team does Michigan State have? And I say, well, they have good players, but but a very mediocre team. And I said, but with Tom's coaching, they'll probably get better. And they have. I think they almost get better every game. And he's done a masterful job. You know, I think the talent is there, but I'm not sure the cerebral approach is there. And so he's blended those guys together, and now they're playing very, very good.
You know, also, Judd, as I think of the state of Michigan, last night the Michigan Hall of Fame inducted, among others, Mateen Cleaves and Steve Smith, both products of Michigan high schools. And you've got Tom Crean, who went to Central Michigan, and Tom Izzo, who went to Northern Michigan. All good citizens, players, coaches coming out of the state of Michigan.
Well, now you count Tom as a Michigan guy coming from the UP?
I'm sorry, but I have to.
Okay.
I know what you think about the UP, and I'm not going to go there, all right?
No, that's just a joke we have.
All right. Well, it is, as far as the keys to tonight's game, Coach Heathcote, you put yourself in Dick Vitale's shoes tonight, and we say, Coach, what is going to be a key or two things to look for that will predict victory for one side or the other?
Well, I think whoever stops the other's fast break is going to have an edge. If we can get some transition baskets, you know, that'll really be a plus. And we have to stop Indiana. They run very, very well, and especially Zeller down the middle. He gets a couple of fast break baskets every game. And then I think the rebounding was always a key. And we've been better at rebounding the last few games than we were earlier. So I look at those two as the keys.
Judd, how relaxed or how uptight will you be at 4 o'clock your time watching this game? You can't relax when you watch this one.
No, you know, there have been so many close games, so many low-scoring games that I talk to Paul LaPerriere all the time. I talk to George Fox now and then. I say, these games are hard to watch.
Of course they are.
I think tonight will be. And, you know, it's funny because I go to all the Gonzaga games, and I'm close to the staff there, and yet they don't get to me like the Michigan State games do. And even though I get to watch them, you know, in person, and all I can do is with Spartans watch on TV, I get uptight watching those games, I'll be honest with you.
Well, Coach, I have to admit that I do too, especially when it's not in a home game for us. And for some reason, this year's team, you never seem to get the feeling we're always totally in control. It's almost like, yeah, we got a lead, but you never feel safe with it.
Unforced turnovers that you're never safe with a lead, and yet this club is never out of any game either.
That's true. They're
always right on the cusp of putting it away, and then you sit there and sit there and come on, you guys.
Well, here's Appling, who never the whole Michigan State team did not shoot a free throw in the second half at Bloomington, and Appling fouled out and scored 3 points.
Well,
that can't happen.
17 minutes, and we still only lose by five, so you know, you can look on that as a good sign, and yet every game is different. You know, I look at the betting, I see we're an odds-on favorite, 1 point favorite to win this, and I think that's the kind of game it'll go. It'll go right down to the wire with, I don't think either club is going to blow the other out like we did Michigan. It's just not in the cards.
No. Coach, what about the telecast tonight with Mike Tirico doing the play-by-play? Your old buddy Dick Vitale doing the color, and for the first time, Magic Johnson does a college basketball game. Your old Spartan sitting in that chair, what do you expect from Dick Vitale and Magic tonight?
Well, I think they'll talk about why Magic didn't go to Detroit, which is ridiculous, but then I think that Magic will be kind of prejudiced for the Spartans.
We hope.
Can't help it. And but I think it'll be a very interesting trio. And if you listen closely, I'd guess that Magic will give more insight into the game than the other two guys.
I hope so, and I assume that. Judd, can you give us a couple more minutes? I have to take a very short break.
Sure, I'll be here.
All right, we'll be right back with Coach Heathcote. Stay tuned for more Sports Talk after this short break on AM 870.
On Talk of the Nation, we like to be clear about what we're talking about, whether it's movies.
A B-movie was a movie that was made specifically to be on the bottom half of a double feature.
Or the auto industry.
One mid-level executive at a top automaker told me, well, 30 years ago, we were a car company that would occasionally lend money to our customers, and now we're a bank that makes cars.
Talk of the Nation. Clear, straight, open. From NPR News.
This is Scott Pohl with the weather. A winter weather advisory until 7 p.m. 1 to 2 inches of blowing snow today, the high 28, winds up to 45 miles an hour. Blowing snow tonight, a low in the low teens. Cloudy Wednesday, maybe some snow and a high of 25. Thursday, partly sunny, the high 29.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. Terry Braverman standing by, and we have Coach Heathcote on the other end of our line out in Spokane. Coach, I don't know what it is about former Spartan basketball players that played for you and others, but every other one seems to go into broadcasting. We already talked about Magic, but here we've got Steve Smith doing commentary on the Big Ten Network, and of course your old buddy Gregory Kelser, Mateen Cleaves, Eric Snow, Matt Stekinga. They all become experts now and go on the radio and TV.
Hey, don't forget Sam Vincent. He's been
doing
right.
games too. Sam, yeah. What is it you imparted to those guys?
I figure that they know more than the coaches because that's the way they played.
All right, okay.
And another thing, when you see Earl Robinson, tell him for me that all the world hates a quitter.
Oh.
And
what do I say to Dick Vitale tonight when I see him?
Way too young to retire,
yeah,
but
that's
I guess
true.
Guys get older every year, don't they?
Well, some of us do. What's your message for Vitale tonight when I see him?
Well, just tell him to, you know, say some good words about the Spartans and figure out how they can win.
Yeah. Judd, what young coaches? I know you like Mark Few out there at Gonzaga, but are there other coaches? I know you're so dedicated to the profession. What other young guys do you see around the country that you think are doing a good job?
Well, I think Brad Stevens at Butler is doing a sensational job. And, you know, I think John Gross, the new coach at Illinois, is doing an excellent job. So, you know, those might be two of the guys that I pick out. I'm not in the mix as much as I was, but I still watch an awful lot of games.
What do you recall about your rivalry with Indiana when Bobby Knight was at the other end of the bench?
Well, you know, I think we played 37 times. They won 20, and we won 17. So that's a pretty even rivalry.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Bob was always fun to compete against because I looked at him as a personal friend. And even though we had a couple of altercations verbally after a couple of games, you know, it was over the next day, and I still remember when I had my heart attack, and there's a knock on the door, and we open it, and there's Bob Knight. And he says, I was just traveling in the area, thought I'd drop by and see how you're doing. And, you know, that's the kind of guy Bob was, and because of his demeanor on the bench, he never got credit for being a great guy.
Are you still in touch? Do you talk to him any now and then?
Yeah, you know, I send him a birthday card every year, and about a week later, I get a call. And we talk for about 45 minutes about everything, and then I don't hear from him again until the next year. So
has he dropped off the broadcasting circuit? He's not broadcasting?
We have one long talk every year.
He's not broadcasting anymore, is he?
Oh yeah, he's doing the AC or the SEC. I've seen him two or three times.
All right, okay. And what about Gene Cady or Clem Haskins or Lou Henson? Any of those guys?
Well, you know, I tried to call Lou Henson on his birthday, 83, I think it was, and the two numbers I had were both out of order, so I didn't get him.
All right.
I talked to Gene Cady about every 2 weeks, and you know, Gene got remarried, so I tell him, I ask him if he's still on the honeymoon, and he doesn't know how to answer. Then, you know, he's a consultant at St. John, and he likes that job. He says it's the kids are good, the coaching staff is good. So he says, I said, do they ever listen? He said they listen a lot. So I think he's enjoying that end of his career.
Judd, one person, a friend of mine, said tonight's game reminds him of the Magic versus Isaiah Thomas era. What do you recall about those matchups?
Well, I hated those matchups because Isaiah Thomas was too good for us. You know, he's probably the best guard next to Magic that the league has ever had. And so...
Oladipo not bad, by the way.
Huh?
Oladipo is not bad.
You know, I hope his ankle is sprained.
All right. Listen,
horrible thing to say.
Coach,
we need every edge we can get.
Well, how about Dane Fife now? He played for Indiana, now working for Tom. Was Dane playing when you were coaching, or was that after you'd left?
That was after I left.
All right.
And, you know, Tom worked awful hard to get him. And when he finally hired him, he says, well, it took me a long time, but I finally got him here at Michigan State. So, you know, and then I joked, yeah, but you hired a Hoosier. How can you do that? But, you know, he's done a good job, I'm sure.
Coach, where's Scott Skiles now after leaving Milwaukee?
Well, you know, it's funny. I called Scott the day that he resigned, and he said, what'd you call me for, just to hassle me? And, no, I called him to try to encourage him to look at college jobs. And his reaction to that was that he wasn't sure that he could handle the recruiting and the AAU guys you have to go through and all of that, you know, to get the top players. But he has a condo in Florida, and he and Kim were just going to go down there and spend a little time and relax and decide what he wants to do. You know, he doesn't have to worry about finances. Mm. He's made an awful lot of money as a coach in the NBA.
Well, I would think he would also. There's another one that could step in front of the microphone, but his intensity and as a coach, I loved watching Scott play and coach. A question for you now. The Final Four is in Atlanta. Are the Heathcoats planning on attending?
Okay, I've been to 38 straight Final Fours.
Uh-huh.
We are not planning to go this year for the first time. And the reason is the last 2 years, you know, I fell two summers ago, and I have to walk with a cane. And I can't walk. I can walk, you know, two or three blocks, but I can't walk a quarter of a mile or half a mile. And that's what you have to do to get to the venues now. You know, there's 75,000 people trying to get there, and the buses park a quarter of a mile or half a mile away. So the last 2 years, we've watched the games at the Final Four on TV rather than in person. I give my tickets away.
Well, you go to the site. You just don't go to the game.
Well, the last 2 years, Atlanta, I always went to the game. So we just decided that if we're going to watch them on TV there, why not just watch them at home and save the hassle of the travel and so on. And, you know, we have Judge Party on Friday afternoon. I always emcee the past president's luncheon on Sunday.
Yeah.
So last year I kind of bowed out and said, this is my last appearance. And, you know, I was doing that so I'd get a standing ovation or something. I'll miss the funny thing is, Terry, all of our friends, our coaching friends, you know, that we were close to, not many of them go to the Final Four anymore because they're either old or dead. And, you know, it isn't quite the same as it used to be.
Now, are you saying all that? And what if Michigan State is in the Final Four? Is that liable to change?
If Michigan State is in the Final Four, Bev and I will be there.
Aha! See? I knew there was a caveat. I knew you had it out. Okay. I'm going to put you on. I'm going to do this, I hope, Alex. Don't. We're going to screw this up. One of your former players and a player who played after you left for Coach Izzo And all five of his years, he had Tom Crean as an assistant, is on the other line. Do you remember a young guy named Steve Polanowski?
Of course I do. I always tell Steve, you know, I always try to get you in there more than anybody else did. And, you know, Steve was, I think he played 2 years for me and 2 years for
right.
Tom.
Right.
And I always told Tom, play polo more than you are and so on. He's a great guy.
All right. Hold on, because we're going to try to hook him up. He's in Chicago working for Quaker Oats. Alex, you want me to push this arrow and put Judd on hold here? Okay. Well, hold on, Judd.
Okay.
All right. Now I push this. Steve Polanowski, are you there?
Terry, I'm here.
Oh, man, this is, like, awesome technology. Now, do I do anything else, Alex? Push Judd again? All right, Judd, you're on with Polo. Polo, you're on with your old coach.
Hi, Coach. How are you?
Hey, Polo, I appreciate all those cards you sent and all the information. Sounds like you're doing great and the family's doing great.
Yeah, everybody's doing well, and I appreciate the plug on the radio with Terry here that you remember the days, and you even got the years right, two for you and two for Coach Izzo.
Steve, who first recruited you out of Rockford?
Who first recruited me from Michigan State? Actually, it goes back to Tom Crean, was a grad assistant for Coach Heathcote, and I was at a camp over near Detroit, and I think it was my freshman year. He was the one that turned me on to Michigan State. And from there, the reins were turned over to Jimmy Boylan and then on to Coach Izzo and Coach Heathcote.
What was it like with a transition between Judd Heathcote and Tom Izzo as the head coach? Did that go smoothly?
Hey,
now, Coach Heathcote's list.
Yeah, you're putting the pressure on me.
Of course.
You've got my coach on the line. You know, it's funny you ask, because that's got to be the number one question I ever got as a player, being one of the transition players. And I always, my first response to it has never changed. There was not a huge difference. It wasn't, you know, a monumental difference from Coach Heathcote to Coach Izzo. I think a lot of people just dismissed it as, you know, they looked at an age difference between the two and figured there was a massive coaching difference, and there wasn't. I mean, we sit around at these reunions and joke a lot about, you know, our past memories. And I do know this, because Coach Heathcote had coached longer than Coach Izzo and was a head coach longer, he had a system, and his system was tried and true, and you know, he knew that the Big Ten season was long and rugged. And, you know, so typically you'd start the season with three-hour practices. And by you know, hitting this time of year, you're down to maybe an hour, hour and a half. And it was very much, you know, preparation and teaching and coaching and, you know, tried to just minimize the injuries. And I remember those, you know, especially that first year with Coach Izzo, we still joke with him about it. I mean, from the last game that Coach Heathcote coached, you know, I think it was the next morning we were in the gym at about 6 a.m. running, and that didn't stop anytime soon. But besides that, I mean, we joke about that, but besides that, not a huge difference in my mind.
Judd, when you talk about what it's like to be a coach and you sit back in your rocking chair, the association you have with your former players has to be one of the most satisfying part of the job now.
Well, the fact that so many have done so well, you know, I'm not including Paulo, but, you know, the others have done so well. But I forgot the logistics involved in Paulo's recruitment, but now I see that there's another thing I can hold against Tom Crean.
Well, you know, as I recall, Steve, you were one of the first players that the fans adopted as one of their favorites. It became Steve Cherry later on. It was always a guy that was not a starter, but on the bench, and everyone wanted him into games, so they'd start yelling, Polo, Polo, we want Polo. And Judd, what pressure did that put on you, or did that make you keep him out longer?
No, you know, I was Paulo's biggest fan. The first two years that Tom coached, and I kept trying to get Tom to play him more. I'll be, you know, I remember that just like it was yesterday. And so I wasn't as successful as I wish I had been, but still, Paula was a great contributor to the program.
Paula, what tell Judd and tell the rest of our radio audience what you're doing now.
What I'm doing now is my lovely wife, Marianne, who I met in the Breslin Center 18 years ago, and I, we have three boys, 8, 6, and 3. We've been living here in the Chicagoland area for the last 7 years, and during that time, I'm working for Quaker Oats, and I'm working on a new yogurt venture that we've just started over the last year. So it's been great. We love living down here because we're in Big Ten land here in Chicagoland at the heart of it, but yet close enough to home where, you know, we've been back for a couple games already this year.
Big Ten tournament comes to Chicago this year. Steve,
yeah.
You plan on attending?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's so convenient that working downtown here, it's about 2 miles.
What was your major?
I was a business major, yeah. And then came back and got my my MBA in marketing from Michigan State.
Chicago has become.
He majored in oatmeal.
Exactly, and it's paying off now, Coach.
Well, Chicago has become a hotbed for young Michigan State alums to work, has it not? There's so many clubs and so many members in Chicago. It really is a lot of green.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think we have the largest alumni association base outside of Michigan, outside of Detroit. And to be quite honest, I mean, it was not our intention to, you know, to move to Chicago. Right after Michigan State, I went overseas and played. And as I mentioned, I came back to school and got a master's degree. And from there, went to Milwaukee, spent a bit of time working in Germany. And then this opportunity opened up 7 years ago, and here we are. And you know, we're very happy for that.
What is playing basketball at Michigan State under Heathcote and Izzo? What kind of a work ethic? What kind of help did that give you in the real world?
I mean, tremendous. I mean, first of all, it's there's obviously a lot of recognition when you introduce yourself to anybody in this country and even in other countries. When you say you played basketball at Michigan State, I mean, it raises a lot of eyebrows. And from a life skill standpoint, you know, we were taught every day it's all about intensity, being a competitor, being prepared, and you know, and lastly, you know, enjoying what you're doing and constantly getting better. And you know, that's what we do here at Quaker Oats. That's what, you know, I've seen in my professional career is it pays dividends. I mean, I constantly go back to, you get to the end of a practice and you don't think you can go anymore. And, you know, Coach Izzo would put us on the line and say, you're not going to die. You can do one more. And that is indeed very true in life.
All right. Now, I'm going to put you on the spot because Judd seems to have sired so many former players / broadcasters. Now, Steve Polonowski, you're the broadcaster. You're getting ready to do tonight's game. What do you see as a key or two that'll happen that could result in a Spartan victory tonight? What would you say as you look at the Indiana Hoosiers and Michigan State matchup?
Well, I go back. I still use a lot of things and say a lot of things that Coach Heathcote taught me during my time there. And this coach is the game that you would say, guys, we control our own destiny. And that is indeed the case. And I think, you know, I was listening earlier on Coach's thoughts on, you know, containing Zeller. You know, I think our big guys certainly have to have another big game like they did the last go around. We've got to contain their guards. But, you know, I go back to, and I think I've got my stats right, including my redshirt year. You know, we played Indiana 10 times. And while I never lost, or I never won in Bloomington, I never lost in East Lansing. And you have just this tremendous, tremendous advantage of the home court. And I think, you know, We've seen that for a long time, but we especially saw that last week against Michigan. So I'm expecting a great game. I'm not expecting a blowout, but I'm expecting the home court advantage to deliver again.
Steve, pretty good summary. Coach, you impressed? Are you awake?
I've always been impressed with Paolo. He's always had a bigger brain than he did ability on the court.
Steve, all right, just for that, I'm going to you get to imitate Coach Heathcote. Give me your best Judd imitation right now while he's listening.
I'm not good at it. Okay.
Yes, you are. I heard you.
Paolo, get some hands on those stubs. when I would drop the ball.
Okay, that's good enough. Yeah. Hey, Steve, thanks so much for visiting with us. I'll let you go, and Judd, I'll let you sign off with Steve.
Okay, Steve, it's great to hear from you. I'm glad your family's doing well and you're doing well, and keep rooting for the Spartans.
Yeah, we'll do, Coach. It was a pleasure. Thank you very much, and thank you, Terry.
Thank you. Steve Polonowski, and Judd, I'll let you go. I've kept you much too long. I know you've got things to do, and get your ankles taped for 7 o'clock tip-off.
Taped for the game, right. Okay.
Our best to Bev, by the way.
Huh?
Our best to Bev.
Hey, best to Gale also.
Thank you very much, Coach. Judd Heathcote, do I have to sign off on him or let go of that thing or what? Punch it out? What do I do? Is he gone? I don't know. Alex here, I'm pushing buttons like a... Oh, I put off. That's it. There you go. Cool. All right, we're going to take a break. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break right here on WKAR AM 870.
If your child is being bullied on social media sites by schoolmates, when is it appropriate for you or the school to intervene? That's one of the questions we'll discuss on the next Fresh Air with Emily Bazelon, author of Sticks and Stones, about the culture of bullying and efforts to stop it. Her research took her to homes, schools, courtrooms, and the offices of Facebook. Join us.
There's a winter weather advisory until 7 p.m. 1 to 2 inches of blowing snow. Winds up to 45 miles an hour. The high 28. Tonight, blowing snow, a low of 11. Cloudy Wednesday, maybe some snow until midday. The high 25. And partly sunny with a high in the upper 20s Thursday. I'm Scott Pohl.
We are back on 870 AM Sports Talk. I'm Terry Braverman, and we appreciate the time spent with us by the former coach. It was only 10 after 10 in the morning when we reached him. 10 after, it's a three-hour time difference, and Judd was very gracious to say, yeah, call me tomorrow, we'll be happy to talk, and I do appreciate it. I'm sorry I couldn't put other callers on the line, but let's go to the phones now in the last 20 minutes. I'll go to Ron in Bellevue. Ron, are you with us?
Yes, I am, Terry. Nice to hear your voice on the radio. I do remember the Quonset Hut there where Breslin is, and I also played basketball at Michigan State, but that was only on the sidewalk.
Okay.
A couple questions.
Go ahead.
Do you have an opinion about why they don't have green outs instead of white outs ever? And do you think if the game is refereed the same way as the Michigan game tonight, that it could possibly get out of control? Because I think, unlike Michigan, Indiana would push back at Michigan State.
Interesting. Let's go to the first part of your question. I do have some knowledge of why we have whiteouts, and it's all a case of white or even red showing up so much better in an arena. Green is totally lost. It blends in, and from a viewer standpoint, when you want to try to impress people who might be watching the game, whether it's football or basketball, green just washes. It blends. And white jumps out, as does red. And I'm guessing so does blue. So in reality, down in Ann Arbor, they're having, I don't know if they call them yellow outs. Never thought about that. But they do wear yellow so it jumps. And white does jump out. And the more you see, the better it looks and the more excitement. Green's not going to work. It just doesn't work. It's a nice color. I mean, I love it. But it doesn't work in the audience and for the crowd. And the marketing people have done their homework. They know that. And it's all about television and viewers. All right, second part of your question. I can't answer. I can only surmise that the Spartans won't be subject to as many questionable calls at Breslin as they were at Bloomington. And so I hope it's – I don't care if it's officiated similar to the Michigan game. It's the bottom line. What was that, a 23-point win? And that's all I would hope for. I hope they let them play. I don't mean I hope they get out of line, but I hope they let the players play. And I hope that, therefore, we can keep a Keith Appling or a Brandon Dawson from getting too many early fouls. If they let a little bit of pushing and shoving, that's fine. I do know this, that the Big Ten really is looking for, and the officials are encouraged to look for, that flagrant foul this season. You'll see more timeouts with the officials going to the monitor to look and see if that elbow that looked like it was thrown was intentional. Therefore, it's two shots on the possession of the ball. But in most cases that I've seen this season, Ron, it's not a flagrant foul. It is not intentional. Guys just are taught to go up and come down and swing the ball around. They're not trying to hurt anybody. And I take the player's side in this one, and I say, hey, it was not a foul, period. But in some cases, it may be intentional, but very, very few times. And I hope they let them play, and may the best team win.
Thanks, Terry. I agree, and you're right. A lot of those are inadvertent, but I find it very hard to believe that both of the blows to Trice, there was no fouls called. So thanks. Have a great day.
All right, Ron. Thank you. Thanks for calling. I never gave our phone call. Never once did I give our number, Alex. That's your fault. I'm going to blame you. Our number is 355-9527 if you're in the 517 area code. If not, we can still take a call toll-free. It's 877-952-7870. By the way, in case you're watching or even listening on the radio tonight, the game won't start till about 7:05. I think we're scheduled for the team introductions about 7:01:30. There's a special presentation during one of the timeouts with Magic Johnson as well. So it should be, and I know it's being almost overhyped. I almost fear on the Michigan State side that there's too much emphasis on the game. I hope it doesn't get out of whack, because the players need to focus, they need to concentrate, and they should not be distracted. And that's what any coach fears, distractions. Let's let the game play, and hopefully there aren't any. Let's go back to the phones. Ed from Flint is on the line. Ed, welcome to our sports talk.
Well, good afternoon. It's good to talk to you. I've got a question I've had in the back of my noggin for quite a while, especially with Indiana coming to town tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And I may be wrong, but I think they have attempted more free throws and made more free throws than all the free throws attempted by their opponents. They get the other team in foul trouble. And my question is there a criteria that the Big Ten uses to select officials, and what might that criteria be? And number two, how are the officials held accountable? That is, you know, if they screw up, are they given annual evaluations, monthly evaluations, and do they face any kind of discipline for their screw-ups? And I've always wondered about that, because I've been watching Big Ten basketball for way too many years, and sometimes the officiating leaves a whole lot to be desired.
Oh, boy. Ed, you're probably asking the wrong guy. I can give you a really rough possible answer. And yes, they are held very, very accountable. And every game, there is a Big Ten official watching, the observer, they call him. Used to be a fellow from right here in this area, and he would be the observer and then report back to the Big Ten after every game on each one of the officials. He did this, so-and-so did that, I liked this, I liked that. And they had a checklist of things they did right, things they did wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And then they are evaluated weekly. At the end of the season, yeah, there'll be a summary. But if someone has made a really bad decision or a bad call, they'll be called on the carpet in Chicago by the Big Ten office immediately by the head of officials, and they'll be shown the film. They look at films all the time. And football, even more so. They'll be looking at films of a previous game they worked right up until 2 hours before that game. They really do try and train them and try and do a good job. We've got a lot of newer, younger officials in the league, which I like to see. But yeah, they are questioned. But after the fact, and you wouldn't know about it. They don't want the public to know about it.
Well, I know, and I think that hurts the credibility of the league, and that is there's no transparency. You know, you can sit back and say, boy, that was a lousy call, and maybe it wasn't, or maybe it was, but we never know that. And also, how do they find these officials? How do they have to undergo a physical every year? Do they have training?
Oh, yeah.
They don't get that word out. There's no transparency, I guess, and that's what really sometimes makes you shake your head.
Well, it's a good thought that maybe a reporter that was enterprising could go to the office and the Big Ten and try to do a story, an in-depth story on how they're trained. As long as it's, you know, not going to call attention to any one particular official, but in general, that's worth looking into. I do know that they try to look at, and they scout other officials in, let's say, the Mid-American Conference. Good high school referees move on to small college. Small college officials, when they're good, they get recruited and they go into the Big Ten. From the Big Ten, the only place you go is the NBA in cases of basketball, but more likely in football, they need more officials. Then the ultimate goal for an official is to make it to the NFL. And that's that's even a much more difficult screening process. But I wanted to go back to something you pointed out. I'm looking at the stats for tonight's game and for Indiana. Their field goal defense, looking at three-point, they shoot over 40% from three. I think that leads the Big Ten. They hold their opponents to 33%. Free throw percentage, I'm looking at the wrong one. Hold on.
Okay.
Indiana. They average 80, almost 83 points a game offensively. Michigan State is averaging 70 points a game. Defense, Michigan State holding their opponent to 59. Indiana holding their opponent to 61. So we have a little margin there. But here's, listen to this, scoring margin. Indiana averages over 22 points a game more than their opponent, as opposed to Michigan State is a plus 10.9.
But how many free throws do they shoot every game?
Free throw percentage, they shoot 74%. Michigan State shoots 71%. And I think Indiana has the best free throw shooting percentage in the Big Ten. And I don't know that. I think you're correct that they probably have shot more free throws than anybody else. But, you know, that's to their credit. That's part of the game.
Try to get
fouled. You don't have to always necessarily make the two-point or the three-point shot. But, hey, I appreciate your call, Ed. We got more calls. I'll let you go. And thanks for the phone call from Flint. Say hello to all the Flintstones.
Oh, will do. Take care.
All right. Let's go to Bob in Eagle. Bob, welcome to Sports Talk AM 870.
Hey, good to hear you on the radio there, Terry.
It's good to be here.
You've got a lot of inside knowledge. The last caller just brought up some things that most people don't have privy to on the inside. But my point is regarding tickets. A fellow called in on Tim's show. Relative bought a ticket.
I don't have any tickets, Bob. No.
I don't. Well, you got me tickets one time to Tallahassee.
Well, that's when I was in the Ralph Young Fund. Now I'm not there anymore. What's the question?
Okay, here's the point. The person's relative bought a ticket out on the street, paid $100 for it, got up to Breslin. Scam ticket?
Scalped.
Well, I have had the idea and have written to the NCAA a couple of times. I never hear boo back about it. It particularly galls me with the tournament when you have four games the first day. You see all these empty seats out there, and there are people that love to see their home team play. So what I have suggested was the NCAA operate a broker situation where I come up with my ticket. It's a $20 ticket. I put an envelope. They give me a tag pull off with the number. They keep it. You want a ticket, you go up to the window, you pay face value for it. I get, say, $15 for it. That helps pay for
Stop. Let's go back in the process. How did you get your ticket to begin with?
Well, I have a season's ticket.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the NCAA tournament.
Well, I am. That's the part that gets me.
How did you get that ticket to the NCAA tournament?
Well, I've gotten them through Breslin or through MSU ticket office.
Okay.
But
all right. As a donor, as an okay. All right. Now we're up to speed.
But it's the tickets that you can't get. First, when they come out, the pairings, no tickets available.
Right.
You can go down to the sites, and you can buy them out on the street there.
Yeah, I know.
But it's all empty tickets. So my point is, you guys that have got contact with people in high places, what do you think about my broker idea? And I've written to NCAA twice. I never get a response back.
Well, I can't speak for the NCAA.
Well,
I can tell you this. I can tell you what I know. And that is, let's say that there are four games to be played at that site. The few people who are allowed to purchase tickets have to purchase a ticket for every game.
Yeah, get the
you only want to go to the Michigan State game. You don't want to see Dayton play Georgetown or whatever.
We went to Dayton that time. There were four on. The MSU alumni function was
Bob, the point is the ticket has been sold and paid for. The arena is sold out. Even though you see 4,000 empty seats,
that's right.
They're paid for.
That's right.
And I understand what you're saying. It's a shame that people can't fill, bodies can't fill those seats.
Yeah, interchange system and get those tickets.
Yeah, right. And I understand that. In fact, in this day and age where we can shoot people to the moon and do a lot of crazy things with your iPod, why can't we figure out a way to fill the empty seats even though they've been paid for if you know you're not going? I can't answer that one. That's a technology question, and it seems to me they should be able to work that out. Like, I know that I have to buy four. I only want one. Here are my other three back. Resell them. And as you said, give me credit for the money that I paid. And all I know is now, this season, Michigan State has started a marketplace. You can go online to the MSU, MSUSpartans.com, and go to tickets and go to Marketplace and figure out through StubHub how to purchase tickets that other people want to resell. I think they take 15% off the top. And so you then sell your tickets and there's someone in the seat. Obviously, if somebody pays good money for this, they're going to go and sit in the seat, and therefore
well,
we have bodies.
What do you think of my idea of the broker office that NCAA could operate at the venue? One says to sell, and the other says to buy.
Sounds easy. Sounds good. I like it.
You know why they won't do it, in my mind? They have sold those tickets, in most cases, in advance, far in advance. They don't give a hoot. They've got it sold out. They don't care if Bob needs a ticket.
Well, so you're probably right. You're probably right. And the next time you see Mark Hollis, the athletic director at Michigan State, you can present that to him. By the way, I was going to ask Judd. Hollis is now... Here he is, a former basketball manager for Judd Heathcote. Now he's the athletic director and on the NCAA basketball committee. He's going to be one of the people deciding on the 64 or 68 teams that make the NCAA tournament.
I am going to write that up, and I'm going to drop it off.
It to Hollis. All right, Bob.
Thanks
for the phone call.
Yep.
Say hello to the folks in Eagle. All right, we're about out of time here. What do we go till, Alex? 59? Oh, I got 25 seconds? Perfect. Oh, another minute. All right. Okay. I just want to say thanks to Judd again and to Steve Polanowski. And tomorrow, obviously, we're going to review and talk ad infinitum about how the Spartans beat the Hoosiers. And then I'm going to get into women in sports broadcasting. We have a couple of broadcasters that we're going to be in touch with and see what's happening in their world and what it's like in the world of female broadcasters in sports. Thanks so much for listening. This is Terry Braverman. Talk of the Nation coming up at 3 o'clock right here at AM 870 WKAR. So long, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow, 1 o'clock.
This is Sports Talk from AM 870 WKAR.